What's better than watching your team win? Winning money while you do it. I'm Jim Costa, and on Cash the Ticket, Mike Valenti and I give you the edge to make every game playable. College football, NFL, we're breaking it all down game by game. Your podcast feed is going to be filled, and you're going to love it. You can click on the games you care about. We do it all. With our analysis, we're finding games that other people aren't talking about. We're turning every Saturday and every Sunday into days where you got a chance to win. Don't just sit on the sidelines. Cash the Ticket with us. Follow Cash the Ticket in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Dan, we were just gushing about that overtime statement drive. I know things, this new season, stuff doesn't always carry over, but identity looks like it did. How are you feeling? Good morning.
Morning. Yeah, good. It was, anytime you win in this league, man, it's a good win. And you'll take it. Ultimately, it wasn't the cleanest game. We did what we had to do. But to your point, just to know that you feel like you've improved in some areas, you are more talented, players are more developed, but you always need to make sure you never lost your identity and that what we're about is always there. And I think that showed up in a big way, and that always is going to make me feel good.
What was a two-part question here? What was the one thing that you liked the most, that you did the best in that game against, not you personally, but your team did the best against the Rams? And what was the one thing that you look at and say, that's not championship football?
Well, I thought we, for the most part, I thought we ran the ball pretty well, man. We were pretty efficient. Mm-hmm. Up front, we were very efficient, as a matter of fact, in a run game. And I'm talking about first, second, third, and fourth down. So that was something that was one of the best we've had here in 4 years. And I thought on the defensive side, we shut down the run game. Now, they hit a couple of perimeter runs. They put a couple of wrinkles in there. But ultimately, we took them out of what they wanted to do. And that's a good thing, that's a good thing. I think the downside, which, listen, I told the team, I told the coaches, we talked about it, just those two games before we played, the Thursday night game, the Friday night game, every year, though, more teams more games are lost than they are won. And the amount of mistakes, and I'm not talking about technique, wrong foot here, missed with his hand. I'm talking about blatant, errors. Like, man, we're not targeted right. Wait, you're going there, I'm going here. The drop balls, the egregious ball security, just thing after thing after thing. And ultimately, we were not good enough there, and we have to clean it up, but yet, man, relative to the big picture, we were not as bad as you think we were. So that's encouraging.
What was your assessment of the passing game? Looked like some of those third downs out of sync. I don't know if it was the Rams or something that you guys need to clean up, but what was your read?
Well, listen, the passing game, it's a little bit, it's always going to be the last to come. It the precision of your pass game is the hardest thing to really find a rhythm in, because everybody has to be on the same page. And that's from, obviously the timing of the quarterback, the receivers, the timing, the protection, holding up long enough. And so there's so many moving parts that are in that. It's the last thing that really comes. So, of course we wanted it to be better, but I'm also not that surprised that we were off on a little bit. And look, inevitably what happens, man, first game out, first real game, now everywhere, man, we're flying. You're excited, I'm about to go make some plays, and then all of a sudden I'm short on a route. Or I'm supposed to get my depth at 5 yards, I'm running across the field here. And man, I look up and I'm only 2 yards deep. And, it affects everything. And then, quarterback, he gets off on a couple of things or progresses too fast or there's just these little things that go in, and one thing affects the other too. And, we talk about it all the time. When you're expected to be somewhere or do what you're supposed to do and then you don't, then in the back of your head, you lose trust. There's just a little bit of that, okay, well, then maybe I need to help out a little bit more. And then the player next to you corrects his problem, well, you're trying to, like, help him, and then you screw yourself. And now all of a sudden you get in a bad way. So it's all those little things that come with, man, the excitement of a first game, cleaning some things up. And look, we're going to be so much better next week collectively. But so should all teams. You know, Tampa will be better.
When you look at, because there's going to be a lot of eyeballs on a first round pick, how would you evaluate the first performance by Terrion Arnold?
I liked his performance. I was encouraged by his performance, and because really I never felt like in that game at all. I'm like, man, I'm worried about Terrion. You know, I hope he holds up. You know, it's his first game. That never even crossed my mind. He was honestly the least of my concerns, which that's a good thing for a rookie. Mm-hmm. I thought he went over there and competed. I think obviously it's not too big for him. I think he is the same guy on every play, win or loss or whatever it is, which, I love the heck out of that. You talk about getting to the next play, just move on. He's all about that. So I thought it was a good outing for him. There's things he's got to clean up, and he will clean up, but he's only going to get better and better. So, yeah, I thought it was a positive outing for him first game out.
Coaching points on the PI calls, or you just don't want to take that aggressiveness out of him?
No, I mean, I'm not that concerned. I think there'll be a little bit of, all right, man, you can feel it now, ball in the air, so just – trying to get your head around a little bit to find it and continue to do what you're doing, playing aggressively, and that'll take care of that. You know, if they feel like you're playing the ball a little bit more and you're covering the way you are, they probably aren't going to throw that. So, well, those will be some coaching points to it, but certainly I don't want to take away his aggressiveness, man. We play defense a certain way here, and we're going to be aggressive, but we'll just tweak some of his technique, that's all.
When you have an overtime like you do and you hand the ball to David Montgomery and you have so much success, hindsight's 20/20, everybody always says, well, why didn't they do that more in regulation? What goes into the decision of when to use Jahmyr Gibbs versus when to use David Montgomery?
Well, I think, you know, the first game out, you got them tagged, and there's things that you want to use for really both of them. And then on top of that, you want to make sure that you're trying to take care of both of them, being that it's the first game. And you want to spread that load a little bit. And so there'll be these, you know, specialty things for both of them, really, that are in and out. And then one of them will major in a series. And so, you know, we start the game that way. And, you know, we popped a couple of things there. You know, we had a couple of runs, but we never really broke anything big. They were efficient and, you know, they were good, but it never really blew open the door during the game. Now, what hurts there is when you have as many three and outs as we did, it's one thing to not have success and have to punt, but the three and outs are a killer because now you can't get in a rhythm. You know, and so you're like, well, man, why don't you keep running the ball? Well, we never really could get to the next first down to do that. Well, why not get St. Brown the ball? Because we could never really get to a conversion. You know, we try, and you're a little bit short. And so that's the big thing is third down was the story of this game on offense. I mean, that was one of the first questions you asked. Third down's got to be better for us offensively. Once we convert, man, now we're cooking. We're on to the next sequence, and now you're putting it in the ball, putting the ball in the hands of your playmakers, and Goff's getting on fire. He gets in a rhythm. You continue to use the run game, and then you're on to the next one and on to the next one. And so that was really the story of the game offensively is too many three and outs.
Looking on the defensive side, we're talking to Lions head coach Dan Campbell. The pass rush, when they're down two tackles going in, they lose two guys in game. I think everybody wants to see big sack totals. How did you evaluate the job that you guys did up front getting to the quarterback?
You could put two high school tackles out there, and we weren't going to get to the quarterback as fast as he was throwing this ball. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, that ball came out in a hurry. And it, you know, if you look at the game and when he held the ball at any time significantly, we were beating these tackles. It wasn't about that. I mean, the sacks and everything else, man, I give Stafford credit, man. He played fast. He played efficient. you know, they adjusted pretty quickly to what type of game it was. And the good news is we made them one-dimensional for the most part. And they knew they couldn't hold it, and they had to get the ball out. And they did a good job over there, you know. But I think what we've got up front can be special. I really do. Hutch and Davenport on the perimeter, I think they complement each other very well. I think you can see the power and length and the ability they both have. But then when you're talking about up the middle now with Mac and Levi and, you know, we'll get Reeder back here. I mean, we can – you talk about pushing the pocket and creating chaos in there and destruction. We have that ability up front.
You mentioned DJ Reeder. Is that the expectation that he'll play this week?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
How much, not only in terms of talent, but to be able to rotate those guys, keep them fresh, and so that when you get to the third and fourth quarter, you don't end up like the Rams did, where they just seem to be overwhelmed. How important is that depth as well as the performance that you expect to get from DJ Reeder?
Yeah, that'll be a big thing, too. You know, that's going to be important is, you know, how do you get the most production out of them, but yet don't wear them down to where those plays they are playing are – and those are high-level plays. They're, you know, their gas tank is about as close to full as you can get. You know, and that's the trick. I mean, look, we defensively played 78 plays. I mean, that's a lot of plays, and especially for the first game out. So, you know, you got to be able to rotate there to keep guys fresh. But the good news is we've got depth and. You know, we got some guys, multiple guys, that can help us in the run and in the pass game there up front, and we're going to use them.
Lions head coach Dan Campbell, we check in every week. Good to hear from you.
Yeah, good talking to you guys.
It's 97.1.
What's better than watching your team win? Winning money while you do it. I'm Jim Costa, and on Cash the Ticket, Mike Valeni and I give you the edge to make every game playable. College football, NFL, we're breaking it all down game by game. Your podcast feed is going to be filled, and you're going to love it. You can click on the games you care about. We do it all. With our analysis, we're finding games that other people aren't talking about. We're turning every Saturday and every Sunday into days where you got a chance to win. Don't just sit on the sidelines. Cash the Ticket with us. Follow Cash the Ticket in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
It's time to go inside the huddle with Lions quarterback Jared Goff. Brought to you by Ford. Built for America.
Jared, as always, we appreciate your time. Thank you for joining us. And how did you evaluate the performance in week one?
Yeah, you know, it's always good to get a win, and we're never going to apologize for that. But, some sloppy things, just some week one stuff you hope to chalk it up to, and some things that we can easily clean up and fix and move on with.
Yeah, Coach Campbell on our morning show said there were some things that were a little bit out of sync with the passing game. Is that a matter of knocking rust off? Is stuff that can get addressed pretty quickly?
Yeah, I think so. I think there was a lot of good plays we had in the passing game. But yeah, certainly there were some things that were out of sync. And typically, you know, week one there can be that, and you never want it to happen. But again, I think it's stuff that we hope we can get here for week two.
Every game's obviously got a different game plan. What was the plan of attack against the Rams, and did it change during the course of the game?
We knew what we wanted to do and came in. I thought they did a good job on defense, but I think ultimately we just kind of kept shooting ourselves in the foot. They weren't really doing anything that was, like, you know, taking away what we wanted to do. It's just, you know, every time we had our opportunities, it just seemed we couldn't capitalize on them. And, you know, again, they're a good team. They did a lot of good things last year. They will be a good team this year, so. Anytime you can win a game like that, that kind of, you know, dragged on into the fourth quarter and into overtime, it's a good feeling.
So when you go out there for the coin toss in overtime, does the coach say anything to you as you walk out there? I mean, you really have no say. You're not the guy who's calling the toss, but then what's the conversation like on the sideline before you head out there? And what was it like when you came back to the sideline after you guys had won the toss?
Yeah, there's not much conversation. We're taking the ball in overtime, and I knew that. Dan confirmed that and went out there, and fortunately we won the toss, and that was the end of it.
You're not a guy that gets into the drama and all that, but the unavoidable storyline is Stafford's back in Detroit and all that, and I know that's over, but because it gets talked about so much, is it at all awkward when you and Matthew are standing at the center of the field because it gets so much attention that he used to quarterback here and you used to quarterback there?
No, I don't think awkward is the feeling. I think we have a ton of mutual respect for each other. And, you know, I've seen his career since I was young, and, you know, I'd like to think he feels the same way about me. We've both had great careers, and I got a lot of respect for him, and hope he feels the same way about me.
Okay, so you go back to the sideline. You guys won the toss. I don't know if it's a discussion with Dan Campbell, Ben Johnson, or you say it or whatever. Was the plan going into overtime, we're going to shove the ball down their throat, or did you guys just start to do it and say, this is working, let's keep running it?
Yeah, I think it was probably the latter. I think, you know, you hand it off a couple times, and they become big runs, and you're like, why would we not? Why wouldn't we try it again? And ultimately, David kind of just took us all the way down there, a chunk at a time, and it made it pretty easy for us to move the ball that way. But no, I think we could feel a little bit. You know, we just had that long drive on the drive before that in the fourth quarter, and maybe, you know, we felt like they were getting a bit tired on defense, and we can lean on them a little bit. I think that was part of it, absolutely. But yeah, we were able to run it there at the end, and it became David's game there.
Was there a point in that overtime drive where you said to yourself, we got him? I mean, we broke him. I called it a soul-crushing drive, and it kind of looked like that. But could you see it in the Rams' eyes?
You know, probably when we had that run that got kind of dragged down to the one-yard line. You know, there was the pile, and everyone pushed it all the way down to the one-yard line. Felt pretty good about our chances to score at that point. First and goal on the one, and with the way we were running the ball. So, yeah, that was probably it.
Speaking of running the ball, nice scramble for the first down there, Jared.
Thank you. I'm good for one a game, I hope.
Well, you kicked it into high gear. You kind of changed the pursuit angle from the defense, and you got it outside. And there was an extra gear we saw from Jared Goff on that.
That's right. Yeah, I've been working on it. Yeah, trying to, like I said, if I can do one a game, that'll certainly help us.
Well, I mean, Tampa did just get done playing Jaden Daniels, so I think they're going to be prepared for a mobile quarterback. I mean, you got to worry about that.
That's right. They better be.
Jameson Williams, you know, we'd heard about it. We were out of practice a few times. The fans finally got to see it, and I guess this just confirmed everything that you guys felt coming into the season, that this guy can be an explosive weapon, and this could be his year.
Yeah, he certainly can be, and I think it was on display the other night. It was, you know, you never know how games are going to go and who's going to get the lion's share of the ball, or, you know, we always have our intentions going into a game, and typically the game will take you in the way that it will, and in this game it was kind of leaning towards him, and he made a few big plays and a few, you know, nice plays after the catch too, and anytime you get the ball to him in space, it's tough, man. It's tough for the defense. And, I know defenses are going to be watching that tape. They don't worry about him now.
From a view from the fans in the stands or the fans watching on TV, the uniform color is a little bit different with the pants, or they don't have a stripe on the pants. It's all blue. It matches the end zone perfectly. Do you think at all that the blue pants that match the jersey that match the end zone makes life more difficult for a quarterback, home or away?
You know, I don't know. It can be. You know, I'd say it more, does it match the wall behind the end zone is probably the better thing.
Oh, you there?
Jared?
Yeah, we'll take it. If it works, we'll take it.
So you got Tampa coming up. Carlton Davis is on this roster. Is there any discussion with him? Is he become an asset this week, Coach Carlton Davis, to help give you guys intel on Tampa?
Yeah, you know, I'm sure we'll have some questions for him. I know that you know, they're a different team this year and they've got different players, but I'm sure we'll have some questions and see if he can give us anything and on some of the ways that they want to do things. But, you know, for the most part, we'll be preparing and getting ready like we have, and they're a tough defense, so we'll have our answer.
You got Tampa this week. You faced the Rams last week. It's the two teams you faced in the playoffs last year. Are you thankful the NFL scheduled things like this, or would you rather see these tougher games kind of spaced out a little bit more?
Yeah, it's fine. Good question. You know, it doesn't matter to me the way that they're going to schedule however they want. But, yeah, you never know. Are these teams going to be better at some point throughout the year? Are we going to be better at some point throughout the year? You know, you never know. You just hope that, you know, when you do get your chance to play these teams, you're able to beat them, knowing that they're probably going to be good teams later on in the year. And It's another test for us this week.
It's probably not the kind of thing you think about, but back to the Rams game. I was excited to see you guys pocket at what could be a tiebreaker win later in the year because that team's expected to be in the mix in the NFC. Do you guys even give that some thought that there's a little bit more on teams that are contending for playoff spots? I mean, Tampa could be a team in the mix as well when it's all said and done.
You know, I don't think it goes as much as contending for playoff spots. Like, we're not playing for seeding right now, no, you know, at all. But I think it does matter that they're NFC teams, and I think we are aware of that when it comes to winning your division and how the tiebreakers go in your division record. You know, I think the next one is your division record, and then I believe it's NFC opponents. So we are aware of that and know that when we do get these NFC opponents, we do want to win them. And when you get those division opponents, you want to win them even more.
Speaking of the division, are you paying attention to Minnesota, Chicago, and Green Bay, and any thoughts about what they did in week one?
No thoughts, but yeah, I'm aware.
Fair enough. Does it kind of feel like, you know, it's one game under the belt and a win, and thank goodness it's a win, but does it feel like the offense hasn't even really started?
Yeah, I don't know. We had our, you know, fair share of good plays too. I think we ran the ball well. We had some good plays where we moved the ball. Obviously, the big touchdown to JMO can't be overlooked. But yeah, I think the out of sync is a good word, but like getting it in sync and getting it feeling like, you know, we're moving the ball. And I think, you know, to be honest with you, the third downs and eliminating the three and outs, I believe we had three or four of them. If we eliminate those right there and are able to convert on some of those third downs, it can change the whole flow of the game. It can change the whole feeling of the game on offense. And being able to be on the field for longer will allow us more chances to gain that control and that sync that we're looking for.
You guys really don't have a big receiver size-wise. Aside from the tight ends, do you feel like you need to have that guy who's 6'4" and competing for 50-50 balls or big red zone targets, or you guys are fine just the way it is?
Yeah, you know, I mean, we've got Tim Patrick on our practice squad right now, and he's a big guy. Allen Robinson is another big guy. We'll see if we end up using those guys at any point this week or throughout the season, but those guys are on the roster.
Final thought from me. Any comments about the Cal Golden Bears going to SEC country and taking out Auburn?
Yes. Yes, thank you. I do have a lot of comments. How about it? Going to SEC country. I gave Carlton Davis some grief about it this week. That's his squad, Auburn, and 2-0, go Bears, and it'll be fun, man. They're playing well. Get this, you know, be a little bit more of a national stage now, you know, in the ACC, and getting a little bit more eyeballs on them. So Mendoza's playing well. The offense played well. I thought the defense played well. It was fun when to watch.
Is it weird to say ACC?
It is really weird, but it's you know, you got some big time teams over there that are fun to play against.
Lastly, we're in the beginning of the season here. How's the Jared Goff Foundation doing, and what's new that people should know about?
Sure, yeah, we've launched our, I think, third or fourth collection now here in Detroit, and it did really well. I think it did record numbers the first weekend, so it's been fun. The partnership with the state program and Give Merit is still ongoing. It's been great, and just continuing to build on that.
Jared, thanks for your time as always, and we'll talk again next week.
Awesome. Thank you, guys.
There he is. Jared Goff joins us every Tuesday here on Carson Anderson on 97.1 The Ticket.
It's not just about watching the game. It's about betting on it. I'm Mike Valeni, and on Cash the Ticket, Jim Costa and I break down every college football and NFL matchup like it's the last game we're ever going to watch, from the best bets to the sneaky underdogs. And of course, as my co-host likes to say, the value. And the one thing we're not going to do is pretend we're professionals. We have fun with it. It's an entertainment product, and it makes watching games a hell of a lot of fun. So Cash the Ticket, follow it in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, Dave, a couple of ticket techs. I got an interesting Lions power stat. We'll get back to the Tigers at 5. David, what's coming in? Anything good?
Yes, I think Moore wanted more money until the spanking by Texas where he lost all his leverage. So, yes, he signed this week.
But time out. He already had agreed to terms, 5 at 30 in January. There's no scenario you're renegotiating. I don't buy that at all.
Yeah, I think that it was probably just some details that they had to work out. What are our out clauses that he would accept?
And if you don't like Rico saying that, then just argue it. Say why that wouldn't be a reasonable thing to ascertain.
Moore was operating on the concept of a contract.
Wow.
Someone else says,
ah, to hell with it.
All right.
Someone else says, I was listening to you guys and I forgot Santa was the name of the president. I'm like, WTF is the clause doing with the head coach of Michigan?
What's wrong with Valeni? He's losing his mind. No, seriously.
He was confused there.
From the reindeer district.
From J Dub. He says, the president can wear a jersey if he wants to. Who made y'all the wardrobe police?
That's all
people.
Oh, guys, you don't have to get that serious.
Not even that serious.
It's just the idea you're supposed to be above acting like a 12-year-old. And I honestly, I just haven't really seen that before. The photo's hilarious. And by the way, Ward looks miserable. Okay. Santa is smiling like he just won homecoming king. Ward looks miserable. If you can't find humor in the photo, that's a you problem.
Jersey Giant, love it. That is classic East Lansing. Love you, Mike. Love you, Rico. Johnny from Ipsy.
Late 90s, Kenny belonged there. Well, now, he would have failed out after one semester. Who are we kidding? But you belong there.
But every time I go up there, I try to get a little... I bring Kenny back so he can experience Jersey Giant.
Someone's asking this question. Is the better question, why are they deciding now to sign him with the NOA? Would that imply Moore is cleared?
Couldn't speak to it. I'm not so much going to go there as I would say maybe that this wasn't supposed to get out. Remember, the only thing Michigan wanted you to believe was that he was at a desk signing a piece of paper in ink, not crayon, in January. Then the story broke. Then Ward inexplicably went podcast mode. They were going to have to get something signed. If you asked me, okay, everything's all good, sign Johnny Porkfats, or here's our out clauses. It doesn't matter if it's good or not. Let's button this up. We look stupid right now. I'm always going to go choice B because I'm a cynical person. Doesn't mean I'm right. I'm just very self-aware.
Would that out clause be called a Santa clause?
Okay, you know what?
You know what? I'm going to give it to
you. That's not bad. It really isn't.
Kenny?
That's some of Kenny's finest work.
Hercules.
All right, here is your Lions power stat. Now, I said last Friday in Vegas, I think the Lions are winning the Super Bowl. Lions get out to a 1-0 start. I happen to believe you're going to beat the Bucs this week because the Bucs are coming up here where their whole secondary is injured. Dead. Including all-pro safety Antoine Winfield Jr. Rico, Kenny, David, and the listeners at large, is this something or nothing? That's all you need to do. Okay. Something or nothing. Per ESPN stats and research, the Lions are only the fourth team in NFL history to start with two playoff rematches from the previous season. The first three teams that opened their season with back-to-back playoff rematches from the year before: the 66 Packers, the 84 Niners, and the 07 Patriots. What do those teams have in common? They all went to the Super Bowl. Something or nothing. I'm pot committed. We're going to the Super Bowl. But if I can find something that supports my mania and my ridiculous opinion, here it is. Look, I mean, the 07 Patriots were the greatest team in the history of the league. They just didn't win the Super Bowl, but the 84 Niners did, the 66 Pack did. Something or nothing, just a little fun. Deflator. There it is.
Just play the sound effect. We don't even need to hear what Rico has to say.
85 and sunny. We got a baseball team and a wild card chase. I'm trying to sell Super Bowl.
He asked me one question, and I immediately he jumped and went to the other side and just left me stranded. Mike, what can I say? It supports your thing. I think it's ridiculous, but it works. It works. Sure.
All right, so Rico's saying it's ridiculous, option C.
It's ridiculous, but yes, it could be something, yes.
Kenny, something or nothing?
Absolutely something. You're already planning the parade route. The queue line might not be working, but it's okay.
We will have the queue line working by February. All right. It'll be fine, I think. Maybe. I'll tell you this, the queue line will be done and fixed before the district.
That's a flag.
David, something or nothing?
No, it's
damn
nothing.
It.
It's nothing.
Really? You don't get the sound effect?
I'm not going to play it for myself. I mean,
it's cute. It's fun. It's ridiculous.
It is ridiculous. Sure. It is.
You know what, Mike? I can't argue that because of data says it. You got three. It works.
After we move to 2-0, though, I'm going to be able to say we're going to have a playoff party Monday. We start 2-0, we're in.
I'm trying to think, but do the Packers actually count?
What do you mean?
Yeah. No, I was just trying to think. Super Bowl era had. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that would count.
66, they won the Super Bowl. Yeah. 84, Niners, privilege, won Super Bowl. 07, Patriots. Jeez, who did that team lose to?
Eli Manning.
Hate to see it. I just.
Wait, you mean Super Bowl champion? Hall of Famer?
Yeah. Two-time.
Yeah. Two-time Super Bowl champion, future Hall of Famer.
And a 500 quarterback.
Eli Manning.
Middling stats.
Respect.
I'm not putting nothing on that name. If his last name was... That's Eli. That's actually Daniel Jones. All right, I just... It's something, damn it. It's something because any piece of positive, like, momentum in this magical year of Lions football, I'm bringing it to the table. Rico, it's you just got to step aside. It's our time. You've had your chances. It's not my fault.
You know,
had Jimmy G.
I'm not the enemy. You asked me. I agreed. I thought it was ridiculous, but sure.
You're Drago.
I'm Drago?
Yes.
Okay. Well, if he dies.
See?
He dies.
See? David, give me a few ticket texts and we'll move on. But I'm choosing to believe this is something. The sports gods owe us. Look, think of this. The Red Wings are the Minnesota Twins. The Tigers are the Washington Capitals. We are owed from the heartbreak of spring and Kenny's failures. We're owed things in this town. The Wings collapse is the Minnesota Twins collapse. Mm. The Capitals, having no business, mystically, with a horrible run differential, goal differential. Oh, Mike, they've got Holtby. What, not Holtby. What the hell's their goalie? Who's the guy who goalied the Wings?
I remember his name.
Not Holtby.
No, Holtby was like six years ago.
I know. Tom Barrasso. Whatever.
Ron Tugnut.
Right, exactly. But it's... We are owed. This is something. Okay. It's something. So
Tigers make the wild card. Lions make the Super Bowl. Okay.
That's our give. That's our comeuppance for 10 years of having the worst winning percentage of any four sports.
No, because you know what would then happen? The sports gods would say, only one can win.
That's fine. So. Right now, timeout. If any Detroit sports fan could sign a piece of paper that said Tigers or Lions, only one can win. You don't think they'd sign it?
No, they would sign it.
375 win percentage over a decade.
No. They would sign it, but either the Tigers are World Series champs or Lions win the Super Bowl.
I know. When the Lions win the Super Bowl, the problem would be if that happens, we would cease to exist.
Right. I would shake hands and say, Mike, it was nice knowing
you. The meteor takes us out.
Yep. At that point, I would say, Mike, I normally don't do the cigar. Hey, let's just have a cigar.
What would that be like? Like, if they won the Super Bowl, can you? Kenny flipping a police cruiser?
I was about to say, this isn't
84.
At that point, man, shout out to all the law enforcement officers because, yeah, there is no off day. Everybody's in, all hands on deck.
Poor caller DJ. Forget it.
And DJ would be on top of the city county statue.
Hey, by the way, how did Ford Field accomplish fake LED roof? And we never got the real one at LCA.
Read something.
It looked beautiful.
Read something.
Ford Field had a pretend LED roof. It looked great on Sunday night. Why can't we have a fake LED roof at LCA?
It'll be there for the Pistons home opener.
People won't.
John, we just did the picks. You're big on the Lions this week. I'm big on the Lions this week. We're chesty, as the midday show would say. I'm cocky going into this game. I really feel like this is a spot for the Lions to get their offense right against a Buccaneers defense that's banged up, against a defense they were successful against a year ago. Do I think Mike Evans gets a big play in the game or Godwin gets a big play in the game? Sure, but I think they'll be one-dimensional offensively. The Lions will get that offense humming again, and they'll win this game comfortably. You and me are cocky. Gov used the word concerned in his picks, and I wonder which camp people are in today on this Football Friday. Cocky or concerned? 248-539-9797.
I understand the level of apprehension of getting to the cocky level. And, you know, this is all uncharted territory for Lions fans. And NFC Championship last year, but a lot of people are, how real was that team? Was it a one-off?
Mm-hmm.
And now you've started off with a win, and it's following the same path as the playoffs did, obviously, at home against the Rams. It was a win. Win here in the first game of the season. Now you're playing the Bucs. And it was a win twice last year, once in Tampa in the regular season, once in the playoffs at Ford Field. Now all of a sudden, they're back. But here's the thing. Antoine Winfield Jr. is doubtful. He's not going to play.
Mm-hmm.
They've got questionable on McCollum, questionable on Tyke Smith. That's almost their entire secondary.
Right.
What's the I don't even know if we could say the strength of this offense, because I do think it's a very dynamic offense. They are going to run the ball, but against this team, we saw it last year at full strength defensively. Jared Goff lit them on fire.
Down in Tampa.
With no run game. No threat of running. Kalijah Kancey is questionable. And so so many of the playmakers on their defense may or may not play, but I think the best player that they have, Antoine Winfield Jr., other than Vita Vea, who is still really big.
Yep.
They're not playing. So I think they're going to come out. They're going to score early on Tampa. They're going to force Tampa to be one-dimensional, which Tampa's kind of already one-dimensional. They don't run the ball well.
No, they're one of the worst running teams in football.
But once you go into the game, you understand that. You continue to eliminate the run game, and the focus is on the secondary. Focus is going to be on the secondary all year this year. At least our eyeballs are going to be on the secondary. I think the pass rush gets home against Baker Mayfield. The ball's not going to come out quite as quick as it did last week with Matthew Stafford. And DJ Reader is going to be pushing the pocket in the middle. We saw Levi Onwuzurike, four QB hits, four pressures. You're going to be able to find ways to get after Baker Mayfield. And what does Baker Mayfield do? He is, I think, the modern-day gunslinger. He wants to be able to get outside the pocket. He wants to extend plays. He wants to do all of this magic in the backfield and try, and he thinks he can fit it in any tight window possible. Like Kirby Joseph. I think, Brian Branch, if he's able to play, all of these guys are going to have something to say about that in the secondary. I think there's turnovers, early touchdowns for the Lions. I think this game gets out of hand early.
Jared Goff threw for the most yards in any game last year when he faced this Tampa team. Four touchdowns, zero picks in the two meetings.
Mm-hmm.
And you mentioned it, no Winfield. I do think they're poised to have a much better day throwing the football than they did in week one. Dan Campbell on our show this week said, the passing game, that's the last thing to come. So there's right. A little bit of that rust early in the season. This is a great spot for them to get right in week two. And then you're right. I feel very confident that Tampa will not run the ball, that they will be one-dimensional. Detroit was great stopping the run a year ago. Then they add DJ Reader. You throw in the fact that Tampa couldn't run the ball a year ago. And in week one, it was more than a third of their plays were either zero or negative yard rushes. Their running game was in neutral / reverse. So, yes, you're going to go into Ford Field with a one-dimensional offense, loud environment, and all it takes is a tip ball, an interception that doesn't get dropped this week, and the Lions, who won by a touchdown last week, can very easily win by two touchdowns this week. If that sounds cocky, I think it's earned. I think this football team is plenty good enough to roll the Tampa Bay Buccaneers off the field on Sunday and go 2-0. Now, the concerns have been brought up from behind the glass.
Look, I love Antoine Winfield. I love him coming out of college, and I wish he was a Lion. The Lions were fortunate last week to play a team that had a lot of injuries, and it really didn't matter that much. It was still a close, tight game. So I just don't want to buy into that as an automatic thing. I have concerns about the Lions' offense not being able to utilize the middle of the field. And until I see them have a dominant performance where a team takes away the middle of the field and they do it on the outside, I'm not going to pick them to cover a spread like this. I think it's going to be a tight game. I think the Lions will win this game. And it'll be very similar, actually, to last week's game. It's going to be a grind. There might be a chance where they're trailing in the second half. And I respect the Buccaneers. I think they're going to make the playoffs. And I think Baker is the perfect guy. He embraces coming in here and into this environment. That's a non-issue for him. So everybody can get down there, can get as loud as they want. It's not going to have an influence on him. It isn't.
No, but it can have an influence on the other 10 guys on the offense,
right?
And how they operate. You know,
pre-snap
penalties. Start. Yeah, communication can be a major issue.
I like Todd Bowles really as a defensive coach. I think that the jury's out on him as a head coach still a little bit. I mean, he's solid, but is he a Super Bowl type winning coach? We don't know. But he saw exactly what the Rams did. And they kind of did that last year to them. I mean, the Lions struggled running up the middle in that playoff game. It was Gibbs running outside that.
But they didn't even have to run in the first matchup. That was down in Tampa. And my question is, and I agree, Todd Bowles is a really good defensive coordinator. And, you know, we'll find out. I think he's actually a pretty good head coach to be able to be a playoff team last year. And you've gone with Baker Mayfield. Now you extend Baker Mayfield. And he's a guy that you're going with. There's a lot of discussion there. But if he was this defensive maestro, how come it wasn't different? How come the outcome wasn't different the second time they faced him in the playoffs than it was the first time?
And I think I have the answer for you. Todd Bowles is a blitzing defensive guy. There are certain guys in the NFL who like to blitz. Jared Goff's not good when he's pressured, but he is very good when he's
against
blitzed.
The blitz.
And I know that sounds confusing. Not all blitzes get home. And the Lions have an offense designed to get the ball out quick. You want to bring pressure? Goff's a veteran quarterback. If they identify it, if they pick it up, that's fewer guys in coverage, yards after the catch. You know who thrives in yak? St. Brown, Gibbs,
Laporta,
the whole bleeping offense. So I think it's a bad matchup for Bowles. It was proven out last year. I think it's a bad matchup for them this year.
See, I go back to the playoff game, though. That was a 10-10 game in the middle of the third quarter, and it took a 4th-and-1 barely get in the end zone run by Craig Reynolds to kind of get the Lions to seize control of that game. You know, again, I think the Lions win. I just think covering that sort of number in this spot against that team, it's almost like I feel like the Lions right now, I want them to play a road game. I want them to get out of town. I have more confidence already, not even having played this week for the Arizona game the following week. Cause I think you realize they have not left since the very first preseason game. Like, they've been in town for 6 weeks. I just kind of want to see them get out of here, and I think there's a lot of pressure. And you know what? These teams are motivated having lost those playoff games last year. I hated the beginning of the schedule to a degree because it was likely that those teams are going to be relatively healthy coming in here, and the challenge that both those games presented last year, I don't see the games being that much different. I know you're looking at an 8-point win last year in the playoffs. That gets you the cover in this, but it was tight. It was...
So how do Lions fans look at this? You are more than a touchdown favorite this week against the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Do you see the Lions rolling, or do you see it's going to be in the elevator? There's going to be some concerns, not going to be clean, not going to be crisp. You tell us, 248-539-9797. John, you're cocky.
Yeah, I'm very confident. I mean, I guess we could say cocky.
Overconfident?
I don't think I'm overconfident. I'm looking at this going, the last couple of times they've had the matchup, the Lions have won. To me, last year, the first matchup down in Tampa, it was the coming out party for Jared Goff for a lot of Lions fans. Can he be the guy to go out there and win a game? The run game evaporated due to injury, but it evaporated. Now, all of a sudden, he was tasked with, on the road, being able to manufacture drives and points simply by throwing the ball, knowing that they were one-dimensional. And he did exactly what he needed to do. Did the same thing in the playoffs. And I'll give you the score.
Yeah.
This will go from confident to cocky. I think they win this one 35-14.
Three full touchdowns.
Because I think they get a turnover early, much like they did down in Tampa last year. I think they convert that into points. I think this offense, Amon-Ra St. Brown, we know what happens when he's mad. He's going to come out and have a great game paired with another good game by J-Mo, another opportunity for Sam Laporta to come out and be a little better, more productive. I don't want to say better, more productive than he was last week. Plus, they've got both guys healthy in the backfield.
Yeah, I think there was something that happened. They woke up in overtime. They got back to the basics. They became a battering ram. And even if Tampa takes that away to some extent, it's a pick-your-poison situation. I think the Lions want to get their passing game going. I know Gov is fixated on last year's playoff game being 10-10 at one point. It was also a 14-point Lions lead in the fourth quarter of that playoff game. So congrats to Baker for scoring essentially a meaningless touchdown to make it an 8-point Lions win. The Lions were the better team in both matchups a year ago. And this is, again, not Tampa at full strength. They are without Carlton Davis, who's on our sideline now. They're without Antoine Winfield Jr., who I think is their best defensive back. He's a game wrecker. He's a guy that just gets into the middle of the field where you can muddy things up and take the ball away. He's a guy who might be in a deep third trying to break up a Jameson Williams play. He's not in uniform this week. That's significant. And I think Tampa will be one-dimensional. And you will not win football games on the road. You won't hang in many football games if you're one-dimensional in this league. Like, Tampa won their division last year. Can we all call it what it is? It's the worst division in football.
Yeah, and
they might not win it this year. I mean, I think they're a pretty average, maybe a slightly above average football team. The Lions are a Super Bowl contender. They're at home. They're more than a touchdown favorite. Wallop them. Punish them. Beat them up.
Well, and I think we all... I'm not going to throw Kirk Cousins and the Falcons under the bus for one game, but I think we are all very underwhelmed by what we saw, and because of what they did in the draft, if they have another week like that, is there now controversy in the locker room? Well, hey, maybe we need to move on to Michael Penix. They can't do that because of what they paid Kirk Cousins. What are the fans? What's the atmosphere going to be like in the stadium? So you've got Carolina, who is competing with the Giants for the worst team in the NFL. Atlanta didn't scare anyone. The Saints, even though they won, I don't think there's... I mean, they beat one of the worst teams in all of football. So what do you really know? And Tampa, they could be in the playoffs because somebody has to win the division.
Ticket texters on where they stand. You guys can jump it on the phones, 248-539-9797. Texter says, Gov is a coward.
Wow.
That's awesome. I picked him to win and I'm a coward.
Gov sounds scared. This is a common refrain.
This is where the keyboard warriors, I think, forget the Q-tips. I did pick them to win the game.
Yeah, well, but not by enough.
But let's make sure we spread enough blame around. Heather Park did the same thing.
I did.
And Greg did. Greg is very savvy in week two of the NFL.
Is that a made-up thing? Do you have data to back that up? Greg is, quote, savvy in week two?
I don't know. But this sounds like the flack that you are getting merely for picking the Lions to go merely 12-5.
Yep. It's a whole new world.
I'm the only one consistent. 14-3.
They're going to win 35-14.
Yeah, but you're backing into it.
I don't pick them to blow out teams. This is the NFL. Yeah, games are hard.
And these are the Detroit Lions.
By the way,
Tom,
a backdoor cover's in play with this line.
Could be.
Yeah, see, even you said it. Maybe you should have picked.
Tom Sums,
I'm always the target. It's great.
This one says, Tom Sums very worried about the Lions' confidence and ability to win the next game. He reminds me of a small kid worried he's not going to get his pony for Christmas.
I did get my pony, but it was the Ewok Village.
A little Red Rider BB gun.
Lions dominate on the ground, but then shy away from the run for two quarters for no reason. This person doesn't think they run away with the game. This one's from Hunter in Clarkston. He says, I'm feeling cocky about the Lions. I'm really confident about how we look this year and our performance. J-Mo should send us through the ceiling.
Yep.
I mean, that was the missing ingredient of this offense. It was if he's going to be that player that they drafted him to be, I mean, I don't know how you win as a defense because, fine, clog the middle. You got a player who can win one-on-one on the outside. Bring the safeties in to stop the run. Congrats. He's going to blow the top off the defense two or three times, and you're going to be toast.
Is there anywhere on the football field that you believe that this offense can't attack?
No.
Not one spot on this field in terms of, and so if you're a defensive coordinator, and I do think Todd Bowles, real good defensive coordinator, how do you put together a game plan to stop all of the weapons that the Lions have? And you can't just rely on, oh, well, maybe they'll hope Jared Goff has a bad game, or maybe somebody will get hurt. Monroe St. Brown only had 13 yards. Maybe he's, you know, maybe it's the contract. All of those things are not, they're all hope. And you don't build a game plan on hope. You're trying to shut down the middle of the field. You're trying to shut down the run game. You're trying to shut it down the flats because you could attack it with Gibbs. Laporta, and the same thing. J-Mo deep. J-Mo on the sidelines. Like, where do you stop this offense?
And John, to your point, if you have to cover all that space, you probably don't want to have five or six guys rushing the quarterback. You can't cover all that space. Right. But the alternative is he pulls an okey-doke. Bowles goes against the grain. He drops seven. He drops eight.
Okay.
You're never going to get home. They don't have a premier pass rusher. Vita Vea is a good run stuffer.
Sure.
They don't have a premier pass rusher. You're not going to get to Goff. Ben Johnson's going to scheme somebody open. And if you're dropping guys, the Lions are going to be more than confident and comfortable
running the ball.
Running the damn ball.
Yeah. And then all of a sudden you throw in a couple of play action passes, and that's where you blow the top off it with J-Mo.
Yeah. Listen, if they were playing an elite defense that could get home with just four, you know, those are the type of defenses that become challenging for any offense. I don't see that opposite the Lions this week.
No, I don't either. And when you look at, and here's the thing, Jared Goff is really good against the blitz. And I know a lot of people say, well, it's because of his experience. He's not a young quarterback. That's part of it. But he's a heady quarterback. He's smart. He knows how, you know, self-preservation. I got to get rid of the ball because I'm going to take a hit. So he gets rid of it and dumps it off to whoever he needs to, or throws it away.
Lions are going to win by 17 from Josh in Livonia. They'll get to Mayfield early and often. He'll hold the ball longer than Stafford. It's a big game for Hutch, Gibbs, and St. Brown. Says also go green.
Sure.
Big game against Prairie View this weekend. Weren't the Lions up two touchdowns with 7 or 8 minutes left, and then Baker did his best Stafford garbage time to make it look close? Talking about the playoff game.
Right.
Yep. This ticket texture says Tampa wins. And wins convincingly.
Oh, wow.
27-13, Bucks over Detroit. Baker's too good. He's going to cook this Lions secondary.
Baker's too good. Okay, give us a basis of fact.
Do we have an area code on that ticket text?
Is that sent by a member of
the Mayfield family?
I don't know. Are they still living in Cleveland?
I'm not a member. I don't want to come across that way. Okay. I mean, I've been called a coward already. It's a guy who's won a couple playoff games, guys. I mean, let's not dismiss. You did call him Diet Goff.
Sure.
So you think he's just below Goff in terms of it.
And I think the support around Goff is much better than the support around Mayfield. There's a real run game in Detroit. The Bucks, a third of their runs were 0 or negative yard rushes. And now they're going to face DJ Reader and the Lions defense. Good luck.
I'm just saying, last year, both games, Montgomery against the Buccaneers, 20 carries total, 47 yards rushing total. So again,
Gibbs?
Gibbs did not play game one. Mm-hmm. Game two, 74 yards on 9 carries, but it was the seal. He broke the seal in the game when he had the 31-yard touchdown.
Again, but I think you mentioned,
and that led to a 45-0 win like you guys are predicting.
Exactly. That first game, you could say they couldn't run the ball, and that would have been damning. Like, if you would have told me a year ago, the Lions are going to go on the road against a team that will make the playoffs, and the run game isn't even going to be close to good, I would go, oh boy, they're losing that game. They won it by two touchdowns, and Jared Goff had his highest passing yard output of the entire season. Guys,
yeah,
I think we should be cocky going into this game. 248-539-9797. Stay listening for your chance to win Lions tickets. We'll get more of your thoughts. It's 97.1.
I don't know if I mentioned, we're going to open the envelope at 1:30.
Okay.
We all wrote down predictions for this weekend's game, sealed them in an envelope. And we'll open the envelope today at 1:30, but we're taking your predictions for what's going to happen in today's game, or Sunday's game.
Full transparency. I didn't seal the envelope.
No, it's okay. Kang said we're going to use these over and over, so we...
I'm not going to seal it.
Yeah, it's okay. But anyway, get your thoughts in on this one. So, what's interesting about this is the Detroit Lions and the Tampa Bay Buccaneers are no longer in the same division they once were. However, they're about to play for their third time. The first time they played here was 334 days ago, at last October 15th. Then they played in the playoffs, and now they're about to play for their third time. By the time they've got about 336 days, they'll have played three times. So there is a degree of familiarity. And of course, the Lions won the first two. That was when Tampa had the creamsicle uniforms and Craig Reynolds had that huge block that sprung.
Great block.
It was Amon-Ra, sprung Amon-Ra for a touchdown. Second game was in the playoffs. Remember, that was a 10-10 game at the half. Lions scored 21 points on three consecutive second half possessions and pulled away. Tampa Top Bowls, interesting decision in that game. If you recall, they were down 31-17. They scored a touchdown late, and he went for two.
And did not get it.
Did not get it. But that was kind of scary because that's playing for the win there. And, you know, that if they had made that two-point conversion, that last Tampa possession would have been more terrifying. Yeah. It already was because there's nothing as unsettling and dissatisfying as blowing a lead, as we discovered a week later. Like when you have a lead and you don't hang on to the lead in a comfortable, you know, multiple score lead. I mean, that's like, oh God, the wheels are starting to come off. And you're like, stop the momentum. And you just can't, which is what happened in the San Francisco game. But
it's a very saucy call, a very dicey situation. Lions prevailed. And then when Tampa got the ball back, it lasted all of two plays before Derek Barnes picked him off. So
here's my question. Do you think that missed two-point conversion, more than just on the scoreboard, but kind of killed their momentum? Because now they have to score and get a two-pointer just to force overtime. The Lions are in a much better position. 31-23 is a much better position than 31-24 and certainly 31-25.
I don't know if it... Momentum's interesting. I don't know if it kills momentum. I certainly... think that it dampens the spirit temporarily there. Like they're like, oh well, we blew this opportunity. Anyway, we were humming along, so we'll get the ball back. We'll figure it out.
Yeah.
I don't think it killed momentum necessarily as much as it just kind of dampens the spirit momentarily.
So Baker also last year threw three picks in the two games against the Lions secondary, which was rather questionable. Although I guess Derek Barnes is in the secondary, but against the Lions pass defense, which was rather questionable a year ago. So we'll see when the line, like what's, you know, the chess game that always takes place. How would you characterize the Rams game against the Lions last week? Would you characterize the Rams as having a good offensive game against the Lions, given all that they lost?
You know, I mean, you're talking about afterwards reflecting on what they had to work with. I think the Rams played valiantly in the game, despite the fact that they didn't have an offensive line. And that they basically had to dink and dunk their way into a tie game. It really is what they did. And then they busted out a couple of big plays. I thought it was a valiant effort from the Rams.
I thought, you know, and it put you in an uncomfortable place. And I'll say it. And then, see, I mean, is this a credit to Sean McVay? Shorthanded, no Puka.
No.
Tackles are out.
No.
And they still dialed up a reasonable offensive game.
No, it's a credit to that team's quarterback who used to play here.
Okay, because the Buccaneers have a first-year offensive coordinator in Leon Cohen, and he spent 4 years in L.A. with the Rams. One of those years he was the OC. He was also quarterback coach and wide receiver coach, and this is his first year as Buccaneers offensive coordinator, and he's got Sean McVay roots. So I don't know if there's, you know, something that was, you know, the McVay.
Is he a jackass too? Asking for a friend.
There is a tie.
Is he a complete canoe nozzle? There's a tie. Okay, so
there's a tie. There's a tie in.
He's got
between,
some lineage.
Yes, between McVay and what Tampa tries to do offensively. And watching that Tampa Washington game and trying to get a sense for what's going to happen. I'll say this about what Tampa's bringing to the table. They might have made two really good offensive additions. The first might be Jalen McMillan, the wide receiver from Washington. He had a 32-yard touchdown catch. He probably should have had three. He was wide open, and Baker overthrew him on what would have been about a 60-yard touchdown catch. And Baker overthrew him, although he got his hands on it, on another one where he would have been in the clear. He got deep. He got loose deep three times. They connected on one. And given, you know, the Baker love that's going on right now, McMillan could have had three long touchdowns in that game. Add him to the mix with Chris Godwin and Mike Evans. This is an interesting test of the Lions secondary, because it's not like that last week turned into just don't let Cooper Kupp beat you. And Cooper Kupp had 21 targets and 14 right. receptions. This week, I feel like there's three pass catchers, one emerging, but then Godwin and Evans, that is definitely a different challenge than just worrying about what turned into worrying about one guy last week against the Rams.
Yeah, the Bucs have a pretty potent offense on paper, without a doubt, and we saw it live and in person twice last year. You're not going to be able to stop Mike Evans necessarily,
yep.
but you hope to keep them out of the end zone and make things tougher. Like, if the field gets shorter, maybe it just gets tougher for teams to get it in the end zone when they're in the red zone. But Evans is a big receiver, so it plays both. He's just so good. He's so damn consistent. But it's a pattern with Baker, as much as I've kind of done like a 180 on him, the way I feel about him.
Yeah.
He does still have holes in his game, even though he completed almost 70% of his passes last week, or whatever, or was it 80% last week?
Yeah.
You talk about missed opportunities going deep. It's the same thing against the Lions last year. If you remember, after those games, the talk was, hey, the Lions got past Tampa Bay, but remember, there were those passes that were there, and he just overthrew them or missed through, or there was a drop pass here and there. There were a lot of missed opportunities for the Bucs last year in both games against the Lions.
And that's when you were killing Baker, and your excuse was, yeah, well, he's Baker Mayfield, right? <That's>, right? You're like, well, it's not unexpected, Doug. I mean, he's Baker.
I mean, right. I kind of expect that to happen with him, but...
But he's played a lot better since then.
Yeah, he had. You know. And he was playing so well down the stretch at the end of last season.
Yeah.
And then runs into the Lions in the playoffs and reverts back to Bad Baker. I hope it's Bad Baker again on Sunday.
Well, Bad Baker hasn't shown up in about seven or eight games here. He's been really, really good of late. And now it feels like he has more weapons to work with. I mentioned the addition of Jalen McMillan. The other one, it looks really good, is Bucky Irving, the fourth round draft pick running back out of Oregon. I told Kang, I was watching that game, and I went back and mentioned this to Kang, and I said, he gives off Adrian Peterson vibes to me. He looks like a poor man's Adrian Peterson. He's not as big, and that's why, and he's not AP, but I'm thinking he kind of has that running style. And that's what I was like, who does this remind me of? And I'm like, it's Adrian Peterson. But he was on the field for 20 snaps last week, and he got 9 carries and 3 targets out of the backfield. So they put him on the field specifically to give him the football, and he ended up leading him in rushing. So a couple of things that are really going to challenge this Lions defense. Like, every chance that we get sort of another data point to discuss how much the Lions defense may have improved, this game, Tampa's going to challenge you offensively now. Like, this is not an easy game for the defense.
Well, I like that DJ Reader is going to be suiting up.
Sure. Oh, how much of an impact does he have?
Oh, yeah.
How much?
Dan Campbell said. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it's funny how you read the nuance of how people answer questions with Jared Goff. You know, do you guys still need a tall receiver? We got Tim Patrick. Like, oh, he jumped on that real quick.
Allen Robinson.
And now the response to the question of Dan Campbell by the morning show, you know, is DJ Reader going to play, and what kind of it? Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, he was fired.
Oh, hell yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, DJ Reader in the house. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it was just like that.
That's a good impression of Dan Campbell Gator.
I wonder if we could pull that in and match it up and see if it's the same.
See if it's the same.
Yeah.
I think you nailed it.
Yeah, he didn't cover his mouth with a menu that
no,
time.
No,
he
no,
just was, straight up told us he couldn't. Was happy he was, about it. Yeah.
When you're when you're breaking through a brick wall to say the words, oh yeah, ready to just pour some Kool-Aid for everybody in the room, you got time to cover your mouth.
There you go.
Oh yeah. Hell yeah.
Do you expect DJ Reader to make an impact in the game this weekend?
Oh, yeah! I mean, that's how he said it.
All right, I want to catch up on the ticket text. We'll get to who said it, and then the rest of the show will be, I want to talk Lions Bucks, and I want to know if I have a rational confidence, because I feel like they're absolutely going to do a number on this team this weekend. Part of it is what I think of you, and part of it is they're coming here to the walking wounded, and I don't care. Make no mistake about it, I'm done caring. I want to win a Super Bowl. Like, I don't care the Rams were all banged up. Goodbye. It's not my problem.
Right.
But, David, catch me up to speed on the ticket text for the first time. Maybe all show. Sorry.
from Tom. He says, Eric Lindros played years longer in the NHL than he should have while battling concussions. If he played now and not the 90s, he would not have played as long. Tua needs to stop.
It's all about context. Eric Lindros played in an era where there wasn't a whole lot spoken about concussions. There wasn't a whole lot known. Part of that's willful ignorance by the sports. That's been proven. It just wouldn't happen today.
The third concussion should be protocol forced retirement. I don't know how we can make that happen, but it needs to happen.
I think the interesting thing will be, okay, if he ever plays again, you're on a countdown clock to the fifth concussion. I mean, it's going to happen because at that point, your body can't protect itself at all.
Yeah, but the thing is, if you do the mandatory, you have to retire, man, contracts are going to be worded differently because players are going to say, well, I want to make sure I get paid. Because right. The thing, you know, we talked about it in the break and you kind of mentioned this, Mike, but I guess it really didn't sink in. If Tua just says, I talk to my family and I'm retiring.
Yeah, he don't get the money.
In theory, the Dolphins can say, hey, good luck to you. Godspeed. We'll send you a fruit basket. You get nothing.
And no player would ever go there.
Right. It's like when Calvin walked or when Barry walked, the Lions asked Barry for the money back. The Lions told Calvin, well, you're not going to get anything else. Like, you volunteered to leave. So he almost, if he wants to go, he needs somebody to say, you have to leave. And it's going to be medically mandated.
Under doctor's advice to leave. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then he would get his full injury guarantee. Look, here's my problem, too, is when we talk about, oh, well, the team isn't under any requirement. Look, Stephen Ross, who owns the Miami Dolphins, biggest donor to U of M. He had the one-time gift of $300 million, whatever it was. Do you know what else Stephen Ross does on the side? He's a developer. Mm-hmm. He built Hudson Yards in Manhattan. Do you know what it takes to develop a section of Manhattan?
A lot.
Like, he ain't hurting. $50 million? He lost that in his toilet this morning.
Wow.
I'm making a point. Like, if Tua has to walk, take care of the kid, mm-hmm. and be done with it.
Kind of like, you know, what the Colts did with Andrew Luck.
Yes.
We're going to make sure that you get everything.
And no disrespect, but the guy's out here turning his brain into mush on behalf of you and that stupid little logo.
I'm trying to think. The Cowboys did that with Tony Romo, too. They took care of him at the end of his...
Yeah, Jerry Jones did. Yes.
Yeah, said, you know what? Don't worry. We got you. So it's good PR because you're right. That's nothing to a billionaire.
No.
To you and I, we never see that money in our lifetime. But a billionaire is like, all right, here you go.
Just do the, there has to be 1% space left over to do the right thing. God forbid.
From Will, I'm 30 years old, grew up watching Jacked Up with Tom Jackson and company. I can't stand these injuries anymore, though. Not sure what age my opinion changed, but Tua has to look out for himself.
Yeah, I still love big hits. I think it's just something where when it's the same guy and it's the same uniform and it's the very same injury, I don't want to watch Tua no more. Okay. I'm just like, get this guy off the field. Be done with it. Write him a check. Get him the hell out of here. He has to be willing to walk away. And look, it's in print. He's already said that during 2022 and in the post-mortem of that season, he was very, I don't want to say very close, but there was heavy consideration to retirement. Well, then what the hell are we doing now? Just walk, dude, while you can remember your kids' names and you don't need a diaper.
Yeah, but now you got that deal and you don't want to walk away from that money.
Then find a doctor who says it's a good idea to walk away and cut him in. $93 million, keep the change. I mean, Christ.
I think the competitive nature of sports, it will be difficult for him to walk away because
Explain to his kids why daddy doesn't know who you are.
Here's the thing, like it or not, you're an athlete. You're going to feel like a little bit of a failure and a quitter that you walked away thinking,
right, but then,
what if I could have just defied the odds and never got hit
then
again?
Then David has to say this because he can't stop having kids and I hate kids. But bottom line, you being a father supersedes being an athlete. You made that choice.
I understand, but... A guy.
Sorry, David, you need to say that. You have the kids.
No,
I don't.
But here's the thing. A guy with more kids than David, who was an athlete, said this morning, I would go back out there and play. That was John Jansen.
But John's clinically insane. There's a difference.
John has always said how competitive he is.
Right, and he also thought that Michigan had no advantage with Stallions. I kind of stopped listening at that point.
Let's bring it back. Let's bring it back.
Just saying.
And that's just it. Athletes are competitive. To walk away to some but may feel like I quit.
But he has a responsibility beyond himself. And that's what TJ talked about. When it was his kids that saw him, that were dealing with this now, that were asking him questions, that responsibility, it's a weight over your head. Like, you know what? I can't do this for myself. I'm an athlete that made it. I want to keep playing, but I can't.
But as TJ said, he knew. This was my last year anyway. I just have to leave early, but I was going to be done. Tua's in his prime. And guys, what you're saying is correct. But I think these are other issues. Like, I'm in the prime of my career. I can come back. I can lead this team. They pay me a ton of money. Do I really want to give all of this up?
Guys, a few things. One, Tua should retire. Imagine his brain health as he ages. You can't enjoy the $212 million if you can't cognitively think and enjoy your family. I totally agree with that texter.
Okay, now I'll let you finish, David.
No, yell at David Moore. I like that part of the show.
I do wonder, and I'm not a doctor. Maybe a doctor can call in and let us know. But right now, is there that big of a difference between the fourth and fifth concussion?
I don't know.
Because people are like, oh, well, you know, he wants to. He's already had four in 2 years. So maybe the damage is already there, that if he quit right now, it's still going to be the same as if he had another concussion. I don't know this. But it just wonders, is there a point of diminishing returns where no matter what you do, you're already screwed?
Yeah, from Rick, he says, Mike McDaniel kissed him like Fredo as if to say goodbye.
Okay, hold on. He didn't put him on a fishing boat and have him recite a Hail Mary. He was being affectionate and showing he loves the kid.
So long as my mother's alive.
Right. I mean, come on, man. Jesus.
Nothing will happen to Fredo.
I'm a huge believer he needs to walk away. It almost feels like the team or the league needs to make the choice for him, but that's never going to happen.
I think there's a delicate way for that to happen. I don't think it'll be forward-facing. I don't think there'll be a press conference of this is what we're demanding. But the back channels, it'll begin with his family. It will then be the doctors. And then the team and the league have to play a role in this because they got to get ahead of this.
I mean, different circumstances, but yeah, they may just end up Colin Kaepernicking him. Nope, you'll never play here again.
Wow.
I said different circumstances.
I know. It was just the way you said it. And then you're like, nope. I'm like, oh, dear. You're not wrong. It's just the way you said it. Very matter of fact.
The truth hurts.
Yes, Dave.
Tua has triggered my PTSD from Austin Collie getting hung out to dry week after week by Manning years ago. That is Matt in Flint.
248-539-9797. All right, let's get to who said it. Then we get into the prop bets, and then it's Lions football towards the 5 o'clock. Do I have a rational confidence about your football team? We'll get into it. 97.1.
It's not just about watching the game. It's about betting on it. I'm Mike Valeni, and on Cash the Ticket, Jim Costa and I break down every college football and NFL matchup like it's the last game we're ever going to watch. From the best bets to the sneaky underdogs, and of course, as my co-host likes to say, the value. And the one thing we're not going to do is pretend we're professionals. We have fun with it. It's an entertainment product, and it makes watching games a hell of a lot of fun. So Cash the Ticket, follow it in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.